Colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of death from cancer in this country, with more than 103,000 new cases of colon cancer and almost 40,000 new cases of rectal cancer expected this year alone. But the good news is that over the last 20 years, the death rate from colorectal cancer has been dropping in both men and women due to earlier and better screening techniques, as well as improved treatment protocols. Joining us this morning to shed some light, more light, on the current state of prevention and treatment for this silent killer is Dr. Jiri Bem, Assistant Professor of Surgery at Upstate Medical University, specializing in colorectal surgery. Welcome, Dr. Bem. So nice of you to join us today.
Thank you.
So what exactly is colorectal cancer? Clear up some confusion. I know that there's colon cancer. I've heard there's rectal cancer. But what's colorectal cancer?
This is one cancer that is grouped into two because of different location. But in essence, rectum is the most distal part of the large bowel, which is called colon. And that's why we divide it into. Also, the biological behavior is somewhat different in rectal cancer than colon cancer. But general information, colorectal cancer is one entity.
Okay, so it's basically the same cell types that
that's
are found.
Correct.
It's just basically a different location, yeah. So we know the incidence is still pretty significant in this country. I just alluded to it. We don't really know what causes it, though, do we?
We do not. It's a multifactorial process, multifactorial cause, but we know about the multiple risk factors.
Yeah, so what are there are multiple risk factors. So what are some of the risk factors that,
number
know?
One is age, because we know that after people turn 50, the rise in the incidence of the disease is exponential. Another one is family history, not only colorectal polyps and colorectal cancer, but also other cancers that can be genetically associated with colorectal cancer.
So if you have a family history of cancer in general in your family, the chances are greater that you might have colorectal cancer.
That's correct. Okay. Also, inflammatory bowel disease, such as ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, to name a few.
Yeah, and I understand even things like a high-fat diet can contribute.
They are dietary and environmental risk factors, which is, as you mentioned, fat in our diet, smoking, consumption of alcohol, a low level of physical activity.
So if you're sedentary, for example, you have a higher risk.
That's a risk factor.
Mm-hmm. How about other diseases? Like if you happen to be diabetic, for example, would that make you more at risk for colorectal cancer?
Diabetes has not been found to be associated with colorectal cancer.
Mm-hmm. But things like Crohn's disease, things that affect other things that affect the bowel can also affect.
That's correct.
And you mentioned smoking. Smoking has been shown to be a part of that as well.
Smoking is definitely a risk factor, very well established based on multiple studies that were done in the past.
You know, it sounds to me, I mean, one of the scariest things to me about colorectal cancer is that it's a silent kind of disease, that quite often you don't really know that you have it until it's already invaded your colon significantly. And it's causing, by that time, it's quite a serious thing. But what are some of the warning signs that people, because some of these warning signs could also be symptoms of other things. So what are some of the warning signs people should be on the lookout for?
That's a correct observation. Bleeding. Bleeding is the most frequent sign that people notice. So definitely every episode of bleeding should be discussed with your physician.
You mean like rectal bleeding?
Rectal bleeding.
Yeah.
Constipation that does not have a good explanation or is of new onset. Then alternating bowel habits, constipation, and diarrhea. Frequently people blame it on irritable bowel disease. However, once again, it can be a sign of colorectal cancer. Weight loss, overall fatigue, abdominal pain that does not have a good explanation, All these things should be investigated.
So things like bloating, cramping, even vomiting,
Even vomiting, that's actually a very serious symptom that should be investigated. Colorectal cancer is unlikely to contribute to vomiting, but definitely vomiting is a serious symptom of GI problems, so it should be investigated.
So if people have any of these kinds of symptoms, the point is it could be caused by something other than cancer, but probably they should be checked out.
Right? Most definitely.
Yeah. Now, tell me about polyps. I mean, you mentioned that you can have a family history of polyps, but in all cases, does that mean cancer?
No, there is several types of polyps. The ones that inevitably will develop into cancer are called adenomas, and it takes about 5, 7 to 10 years from an adenoma to develop in a frank cancer.
So they're very slow growing.
Slow growing and benign. So that's why the recommendation of many societies is to do colonoscopy once in 10 years, because that's the estimated time and actually proved scientifically that takes from one polyp to develop into cancer. Other polyps might be associated with a slightly increased incidence of cancer, however, it's not as striking as with adenomas.
But does it run in families, the tendency for polyps?
It does.
Yeah.
If you do have a family member with an adenomatous polyp, the risk of you getting colorectal cancer doubles.
You know, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we have a lot more to talk about. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back to talk about colorectal cancer. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Jerry Bem, colorectal surgeon, and we're talking about a very silent and significant killer in this country, colorectal cancer. And before the break, we were talking about polyps and how important it is to be screened. And we're going to talk much more about screening and the essential efficacy of that in basically saving a life that otherwise could not be saved. I personally have had that happen in my life where I've lost a friend who, had she been screened before 50 or at 50, she would have been saved. So, but let's talk about, so generally, if you remove one of these cancerous polyps, have you cured the person pretty much?
Yes. If the polyp is an adenoma and you remove it, is the most elegant way how to prevent and cure the patients. Statistically, if a colonoscopist removes 40 polyps, that statistically means that we prevented one colorectal cancer. It's very easy to do. It's very safe. So I still feel strongly that's probably the most elegant way how to prevent colorectal cancer.
So early screening and removal really does prevent it. And that's why the numbers are going down nationwide.
That's correct. Another appealing fact of the screening and polypectomy is that it's been shown that if you have a polyp, that's an adenoma, and you comply with the surveillance recommendations, your chances that you're going to die of colorectal cancer are decreased by 90%.
Tell me what you mean by comply with the surveillance.
The recommendation after an adenomatous polyp was found is that you have to have a colonoscopy in 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Shorter term than the normal recommendation, which is once every 10 years, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So in colorectal cancer, being able to decrease the chances by 90%, that's really very significant.
That's amazing. That's a cure, really.
And we don't see the numbers even close in other types of cancer.
So that's a sure bet. Basically what you're saying is with colorectal cancer, with screening, for the most part, you can pretty much prevent the disease.
That's correct.
Yeah. But it seems to me, I know you said the incidence is quite a bit, is mostly with age. I mean, goes up with age. But does it exist in younger people that we might miss with regard to screening, for example?
It does. And actually, during the last national meeting of the society, it's been suggested that maybe in the future we will be screening patients who are 40 and older. However, at this point, the recommendation of the American Cancer Society is 50 plus. Younger patients should be screened if there is a history of colorectal cancer or polyps in the family. Usually, the recommendation would be 10 years younger than the age of the person or relative at what the diagnosis was made.
So if your father was diagnosed at age 40, let's say, and had a cancerous polyp, you would maybe start to screen that child at 30.
That's correct.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I read somewhere also that African Americans have a higher incidence or need to be screened at a younger age. Why would that be?
there is a striking difference in terms of stage at presentation and mortality in between American African population and the other races. We don't know exactly whether it's just a problem of lower compliance with screening, perhaps dietary and other cultural influences, but it is a very concerning trend, and that's why we have a lower threshold in terms of earlier screening.
Yeah, so in other words, with the African Americans, you're seeing an incidence growing, and you have the concern that perhaps for reasons of diet or lack of exercise or any other of those things, they may be more prone, so you want to make sure you catch them earlier.
That's correct.
Yeah.
However, once again, the major societies, American Cancer Society, still recommends the first colonoscopy at age of 50, unless there's symptoms or there's family history.
Tell me about the treatments. I know that obviously you're a surgeon, so a primary treatment for colorectal cancer is surgical. How do you know what treatments to use? Because I know there's surgery, there's chemotherapy, there's radiation. How do you pick, you know, your menu, so to speak?
At this point, indeed, surgery is the mainstay of the treatment. There are some special situations regarding polyps with small focus of cancer that can be potentially treated just with an endoscopic removal. And there is
so it's less invasive in a sense, right?
There is some developments in rectal cancer that will hopefully pan out in the future, that we will not need to operate on pretty much everybody with that diagnosis.
Yeah, you mentioned to me during the break that there's something going on in Brazil. Was it Brazil that you mentioned?
There's several surgeons in Brazil who are big proponents of this conservative approach, and they've been presenting studies on the subject during the last 10 years perhaps, and their studies are very encouraging in terms of our ability to treat rectal cancer without surgery. And that's one of the hopes for the future, because rectal surgery is very debilitating in general for patients, sometimes resulting in colostomy, fecal incontinence, and other issues.
So it really would be a great breakthrough if, in fact, you could treat rectal cancer successfully. And does it seem like they can really beat the disease? And what do they use? They use radiation? What do they use?
There is a radiation that's frequently used, you know, all over the world for patients with rectal cancer who present with advanced disease. But we noticed in the past that about 20% of patients who are radiated They don't show any evidence of the disease when the treatment is completed. And we do have a big dilemma whether to operate on them or not. And that's where the Brazilians stepped in and said, we're going to try not to. And the results are, as I mentioned before, encouraging. Mm-hmm. Currently in the United States, the standard of care is still go ahead and operate, because in 10% of patients who have complete clinical response, we still do find islets of cancer in the specimens, and that makes us nervous.
And you never know which cells are going to develop into later cancer, is that correct?
That's correct.
But there's something you also mentioned about the genetic typing that you can do to try to figure out which ones are going to be aggressive. Or
one of the ways how to address this issue is to find out the genetical equipment, if you will, of the tumors that completely disappear after radiation. And if you're able to, you know, tell upfront that you know a patient does have the equipment that will responsible for complete cure just with radiation, I think that's the goal. That would be the big change.
Well, you know, it's interesting because even though surgery has gotten better and more efficient, more effective in general in all of our lives, it's almost like we're trying to move in a direction of being less and less invasive to the patient. I mean, all the new kinds of laparoscopic, endoscopic kinds of procedures are doing that. So this would be another step in that direction. Is there, are they trying to do things more laparoscopically in general with colorectal surgery?
That's basically the trend in all surgical disciplines. Currently, there is an ongoing trial on rectal resection using a laparoscopic technique. We are in the process of getting credentialed for this trial, and hopefully we'll enroll some patients.
So we'll be doing that here in Syracuse as
yes.
well, here at Upstate Medical University. Are there newer, we have only a little bit of time left, are there newer, less invasive procedures for screening that are coming through?
Recently, the CT virtual colonoscopy is gaining more acceptance and is actually one of the recommended ways how to screen.
See, because a lot of people, I know in my own life, as I mentioned, a friend did not get screened. I think there's an aversion to the colonoscopy for some reason, and maybe something less invasive might save more lives because more people might be apt to be screened. Does that sound?
I think that's the thought that led to the development of the technology. At this point, the major societies are still recommending colonoscopy. However, as technology develops, perhaps in several years, we might see that the CT techniques will take over most of the screening.
Well, that's very helpful. Dr. Jerry Bim, colorectal surgeon and assistant professor of surgery at Upstate Medical University, thank you so much for joining us today and shedding some light on this powerful disease. We're going to have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Stay right there. This is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.